Good morning, it's 8:35. State and federal budget cuts are inevitable in almost every sector of the government these days, and Land Between the Lakes is staring down a nearly 50% cut in operating and maintenance appropriations. We hear what leaders there are doing to brace for the impact on Front Page AM from WKMS News. I'm Chad Lampe, in for Todd Hatton. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Front Page AM, bringing you the latest from around our Four Rivers region each Friday morning at 8:35. You can hear more on Front Page PM this evening at 6:30 after Marketplace, as well as our hour-long Front Page Sunday at 9 a.m. Coming up, we get a preview of the next artist to perform at Murray State's Love It Live series. But first, national park budgets across the country are getting hit hard by federal funding cuts, and Land Between the Lakes is no exception. LBL officials are holding a series of public meetings to get ideas on how to spend the park's limited resources. Shelley Baskin spoke with LBL Area Supervisor Bill Lasowski to find out what insight they expect to gain from the meetings.
About two-thirds of the dollars that we spend at LBL each year are from appropriations, federal appropriations that Congress gives to the agency. About a third are the revenues from our fees.
And do you have a hard number for approximately how much you're losing with this 50% cut in maintenance?
The best way to answer that question is probably to say that the total for Land Between the Lakes last year in that account was about $1.7 million. So our challenge is to try to identify ways of being able to balance about a $750,000 to $850,000 reduction. On the other hand, the road maintenance is down about 12%. And so we've got a smaller budget to work with, but we still have a significant number of things that we need to do that we've got to identify for being able to balance that account.
As far as finding new sources of revenue, I understand that a lot of these places use fees. Would there be fee increases to kind of balance that out?
Well, the key part of our public meeting and our public process is to really let the public think about the challenge. And we're confident that as they look at ways that we can be more efficient and thus cut our costs, and then look at the potential for some of the fees perhaps to be increased as a way of maintaining some of the services, that we'll come up with those best ideas that make sense. The Forest Service really doesn't have any predetermined ideas on exactly what we need to do. So I really can't answer your question in a more complete way until after we've had the public process.
Would there be any chance of layoffs to make up the difference in the $750,000?
Well, our hope is that we can find solutions that won't require that. But when we outline a budget reduction like I have to admit that there are some potential services that we may have to discontinue. We look hard at every position that we fill, the Forest Service. In fact, we've left three positions vacant in the last 18 months as a way of trying to anticipate and mitigate some of the budget reductions. But we work quite a bit with partner organizations, with volunteers, with other contractors. And certainly as we adjust services, they could potentially be affected. But our goal right now as we go into this process is to try to find solutions that mitigate that the best way we can, and hopefully still maintain quality and safe recreation and environmental education at Land Between the Lakes.
With these public meetings, what do you hope that you're able to take away from them other than just more ideas? Is there specific things that you would like to see people bring to the table at these meetings?
Well, I certainly want there to be a creative spirit about their public lands. Some folks take for granted that Land Between the Lakes is 170,000 acres managed by the Forest Service, but they actually own the land. We just manage it for them. And so what I'm counting on is that they'll articulate to us what their values of the public lands are at Land Between the Lakes. What are the things that we do that they think are the most important? If I can take away a sense of that priority, of the most important, and maybe some of the things that are a little less important, or maybe even some things that we continue to do, perhaps that the public has decided aren't important anymore, then I have the best chance of being able to make a good decision as we go forward.
You mentioned coming to the end of this and having projections for a high, medium, or low budget. How will the decision on how to implement these ideas ultimately be made?
It'll be a Forest Service decision. We will go through an extensive public involvement process to really ferret out all the information that we can from the community, from our visitors, from our partners, from the the folks that use LBL. And then we'll end that process, and then the Forest Service will actually work internally to try to identify the best decisions to move forward.
Once you've solicited these ideas, how long do you think it'll take before people start to see the implementation of the ideas?
I think that's a really difficult question for me to even try to answer, not knowing what the ideas are. I would characterize them as if they are logical no-brainers. They may be very easy to implement. If they're ones that are much more far-reaching, and perhaps there are some services that might impact some of the traditional users or some folks that may have reservations already in place, those kinds of changes might take a little while to implement. And certainly, we may decide to do something short-term and set our sights on some longer-term things that may take a while to implement, plan out, and then actually do the work to have that come online. So it's really going to probably depend on which ideas make the most sense and which decisions we can move ahead on in the short term versus the long term.
Bill Lasowski is the Forest Service's Area Supervisor for Land Between the Lakes. The second of the four public meetings on the budget cuts is tomorrow afternoon from noon to 2 at the historic Cherokee Park in Aurora. It's only been 4 years since singer-songwriter Joe Pug quit his day job to focus on music full-time. The Maryland native and Austin resident has already garnered comparisons to musicians like R.E.M., Iron and Wine, John Prine, and Bob Dylan.
Yeah, I've come to know the wish list of my father. I've come to know the shipwrecks where he wished. I've come to wish aloud among the overdressed crowd. Come to witness now the sinking of the ship.
The former carpenter and recent South by Southwest artist is the next performer at Murray State's Love It Live series. Beyond the Edge host Tracy Ross and Love It Live host Matt Parker sit down to speak with Pug about his creative process, the inevitable comparisons to Bob Dylan, and his latest album, The Great Despiser.
Joe, the first question that I would like to ask you is one that I know you've been asked before, but I'd like to ask it for our particular audience. It's kind of the elephant in the room, I guess, not only with you, but with almost every talented singer-songwriter. It's the inevitable comparisons to Bob Dylan. And so I guess my question is, do you understand why you are compared to Bob Dylan? And I guess the second part is this a burden or a boon to you?
I think that's a very fair question. I can certainly understand why I'm compared to Bob Dylan. I think Steve Earle put it best. Bob Dylan invented the job that we have, as we know it today in popular culture. In America, I don't think he necessarily invented the form. I think that this particular music has been around for hundreds of years in its own way. He was one in a very long line of practitioners.
A lot of musicians today have kind of gone away from, I guess, the standard model, which is signed to a record label, release your physical musical product, and just immediately try to get as much money as you can. It seems like even more than a lot of musicians in your generation, you've gone the other way. Early in your career especially, you were just literally giving away your music, but it seems like that actually helped you. How do you feel about that model now? Is the old sign with a record label, see where the chips fall, is that model antiquated now with today's technology?
It depends, man. For example, we are with a record label out of Nashville. It's just its role has changed dramatically. I mean, we're able to get directly to our fans, you know, and there's no one telling me what song doesn't make the album, or we get to decide ourselves. I think where there's less money, you know, you get a bigger piece of the pie. So it all works out.
Joe, you'd mentioned being with the label now, which brings me to my next question. Can you just tell us a little bit about The Great Despiser, and are there any surprises or tricks that we should expect for those that are used to The Messenger and the first EP?
Sure. Yeah, it's certainly more band-oriented. We work with the producer for the first time, this guy named Brian Deck out of Chicago, who's done Iron and Wine stuff and Josh Ritter and Modest Mouse and a couple other bands. And he really, man, I wrote the songs in the same way, you know, where it was just me sitting down in a room alone hammering out the lyrics. But then when it came to kind of color the songs and kind of tell the emotional narrative with the musicality of it. It was a lot different this time, and I think it's much fuller. I think it's the best album I've made yet.
When you start to write a song, do you know where it's going?
Oh, man. No, I have no idea. When I wake up in the morning, I have no idea what I'm going to be doing in 5 minutes. In general, just as sort of a general life principle. So, yeah, when it comes to writing songs, I find for me, I usually do have an idea when I begin it of where I think it's going to go. I kind of pride myself on being able to let go of those expectations in the middle of the writing process. I forget what writer it was that said, you gotta kill your darlings. Even if something was your favorite line when you started the song, if you keep on moving along and the song is moving in another direction and that line doesn't fit anymore, then you have to take it out. I think that you can move in a much more interesting way when you're kind of being led by that unconscious, intuitive motion rather than a conscious, well, this is nice, and I think people think this line is really clever, you know, like, that's what I hate most in songwriting is when people try to be clever.
Question about the titling of Hymn 101, Hymn 35, and then on the new record, Hymn 76. Where does the practice of that type of titling come from?
Well, the only thing that I would really know to tell you on that is that those three songs are about the same thing, and I don't know quite what that thing is. I just know that they're all there in the same place. I think I wrote Hymn 35 first, and I just kind of named it that. And then ever since, these two other songs that fall into the same category for me, they've existed in the same universe, so I just named them that, you know?
In your press kit, I think the way it was phrased was, you realized one day while you attended school at North Carolina, you were profoundly unhappy. Was this unhappiness based on location or just where you were in life? Did you feel like there was something you would rather be doing or should be doing other than the course of study you had?
I think that any time you find someone make a sudden life change, you can go back and you can realize that it was anything but sudden and that it was years in the offing. I had spent 3 years attending the university, studying there, and I was a poor student, man. Like, I read a lot in college. I read more than any other time in my life, but I don't think I read one book that pertained to a class that I was taking. I would just go to the library, and I'd start reading one book, and then that book would lead me to another, and then that one to another, and then two more. And I've always been, like, a very intuitive person. I felt like being in a formal educational setting just didn't work for me. I got to go. If I'm thinking about something, I just got to go there right now, and I got to find out all about that thing. And that's not how formal education works, as it shouldn't. You know, I wouldn't want my doctor to be learning like this, you know, for a songwriter or an artist, it kind of works.
So what can the audience expect of you as a live performer? If they've never seen you before, I think, are you solo acoustic here at Murray?
I'm going to be solo acoustic there, and they can expect to hear songs off my first two albums. I'm also going to be playing a bunch off the new album. And I'm very excited, man. I've had a little bit of time off the road. And what's funny is when you're on the road, you actually do a lot more driving than you do playing music. So I've, with some time off, I've actually had some time to woodshed on my guitar and my voice. And this is basically the kickoff of our spring tour. So I'm just chomping at the bit, man. I can't wait.
Singer-songwriter Joe Pug performs Sunday evening at 7:30 in Lovett Auditorium as part of the Murray State's Lovett Live on Stage series. Tickets are $14 and are available at the CFSB Center box office or at Ticketmaster.com. You can also find out more by calling 270-809-3000.
And I've come to meet the sheriff and his posse to offer him the broadside of my jaw. I've come here to get broke, then maybe bum a smoke. We'll go drinking two towns over after all.
I'm Chad Lampion, and you've been listening to Front Page AM. Join Todd Hatton this evening at 6:30 for Front Page PM. We'll hear from a West Kentuckian tapped to be on Kentucky's Blue Ribbon Tax Commission, plus a conversation about cybersecurity. If you'd like to hear this morning's or any of our stories again, you can find them anytime at WKMS.org. You can also join us Sunday morning at 9 for the hour-long Front Page Sunday. Thanks for being with us. The Marketplace Morning Report is next.
It's Support for 91.3 WKMS comes from contributing listeners and OneWesternKentucky.com. With over 8,000 subscribers, OneWesternKentucky.com features community events in the arts and theater, festivals, and other happenings for Western Kentucky. Subscription and event submission information is available at OneWesternKentucky.com. And support for the Marketplace Morning Report comes from contributing listeners and the Paducah Office of Wells Fargo Advisors, investment and planning professionals proudly serving Paducah area investors. Member SIPC. It's 8:51.